welcome everyone to another family reunion. As ever, we have assembled a motley crew of characters for you. In this episode, we're proud to have our friends Labrell and Josh.
What's going on, guys?
Busy week, everybody. And reach us on thesoccerfam.com. That's www.thesoccerfam.com. And you, too, can be an exclusive Patreon member for as little as $3 a month to get exclusive content at patreon.com/thesoccerfamily. Boys, this was a crazy, crazy weekend of football. I think before we get to some of the Premier League action, we've got some spiciness that happened in the Champions League stage, not only in terms of the wrap-up of the group stage, but also the round of 16 draw. Now, admittedly, I probably caught mostly highlights in this round, but Labrell, you were saying earlier before the recording that you might have seen some things. What kind of jumped out to you in terms of that action coming out of the last group stages?
I think that, so we thought there were going to be a few dead rubber games, you know, that wasn't going to be really, us. And then there was a couple other ones, but we had some really, really, really good matchups to come out of there. So, for example, the Man U game was a dead rubber game. We all know that. But we have a new manager. So we wanted to try players. We wanted to get players on the pitch. We wanted to give players a chance to redeem themselves. We wanted to give players a chance to play their way into the team, which they didn't have a chance under Ole. There also were teams that just beat up on other teams as well. You know, so it's hard for me to just pick out one individual, but my overtone of the whole entire group stage was it all shook out how it should have shook out, right? Like everything came out how we thought. What was the big upset? I didn't really kind of see anything that didn't shake out how I thought it was going to come out. You know what I mean? It all kind of was how I thought.
Yeah, that one of the when you look at the list, one of those results that jumps out at you is that draw between Zenit St. Petersburg and Chelsea. There's probably a little too much made of the Barcelona loss 3-0 to Bayern on the week. Josh, now you were mentioning that you spent some time with the Liverpool match against AC Milan. What were the things that you were thinking about after that?
Well, we played a bunch of kids. We obviously starting Mane and Salah was a bit of a surprise considering, you know, we had two dead rubber games, right? Like we had won the group after the fourth game, so we had two of them. But starting Mane and Salah was a bit of a surprise, but those guys want to score goals, right? Salah knows he's not going to win the Ballon d'Or sitting on the bench during these dead rubber games. He needs to post numbers in all of the competitions, and I think he wants to do that. But the kids played great, and really the kids – even with like Tyler Morton, Oxlade-Chamberlain midfield, we really controlled AC Milan. They they got a goal on a corner kick rebound, but other than that, man, they really didn't offer too much of a threat. They had one little Frank Kessie move, and Allison was out on top of him to stop the 1-on-1. But man, we looked really good. But that happened across the board, right? Like all the dead rubbers, you saw some stars playing, right? Like Messi was still out there in PSG's dead rubber. I mean, there were guys still out there playing. And because, I mean, honestly, these guys go to these clubs to play in this competition and they want to play in this competition. They don't want to sit on the bench and let these moments pass them by. Your career's short. And how many times do you get to play in the San Siro if you're a Liverpool player? Well, actually, you get to play in the very next game. But we didn't know that going into this setup. It was good to see the United kids play. The Ilanga kid, he looks sharp. I didn't, you know, I've kind of heard the name and seen him making, you know, the casual appearance here and there. But, I like kids, man. They all have promise of greatness ahead of them. So it's nice to kind of see them get a run out occasionally. So, really, Tyler Morton is what I liked.
Yeah, but was it a shock to see Barcelona lose to Bayern? Like, that wasn't a shock, was it?
Yeah, they get spanked by Bayern every time they
play. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I didn't really see anything that was super shocking.
No, that was that Bayern Munich Barcelona game. I was talking on the home. We had a midweek meeting, and that was some of the worst soccer I've seen. The levels between those two teams was just tremendous. Barca was garbage, and Bayern just completely dominated them. It almost like, I don't want to say it looked like a FA Cup game. Like, I don't want to put that kind of mojo on Barca, but man, they did not look good. The Gavi kid, he didn't look very influential. They're young, right? You can't win anything with kids, is what you say, right? You got to have a little bit of mixture of both.
Probably the other result that did raise a couple eyebrows on the day as well was that City Leipzig result. I think it was a Kyle Walker that got himself sent off in that one, and I don't remember who exactly he was challenging, but that's another one on the day that kind of was a little bit weird. Now, have you guys kept up with what happened with the draw?
I had to ask in the chat group because I was at work and I just seen a bunch of stuff on Twitter. So apparently they're saying that it was a computer error with the way that the balls went into the pots for the drawing. Certain balls were mixed up and they weren't in the pots that they should be, correct?
Correct, yeah.
But hold
on. Or teams got included in pots where they shouldn't have been included.
Right.
And I think those teams are our teams, right? I think our team got included when they shouldn't have been in there.
Sure.
And your team should have been in there when Liverpool, I'm sorry. Let me speak out loud. Liverpool should not have been included, and they were, and Manchester United weren't included, and they should have. And I'm all for, if it's not done fairly, let's redo it and do it again. I don't care if it works out to my disadvantage or not. I'd rather it be fair.
Right. But I'm saying that, like, can't you just do that kind of like manually? Did you really need a computer to do that? Like, you could, you know, you clearly know Villarreal and Manchester United were in the same group, so they can't be. Do you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Honestly, I thought that they really just got caught putting a fix in, so they had to do it properly. I'm serious. Like, that's the way it should. Listen, I don't know. It looked like they got caught putting a fix in, and people were like, whoa.
Hey, Ronaldo Messi matchup in the first draw was spicier than a motherfucker, right?
It was like almost broke for a second.
It was like a Jim Jones Kool-Aid cocktail. It was spicy.
Well, it's a fair question as well. You know, before and after the error was corrected, I say that in quotes, who do we think benefited the most from that outcome? There were a couple of teams who had a bit of a harder hill to climb, few more so than Chelsea, who I think on the back end of that draw, or on the corrective draw, they're meeting Lille?
I think they had Lille in the first draw too.
Yeah, they had Lille in the first one as well. Yeah,
I think they were dead against it. I think Bayern got a little bit easier draw.
Right.
And I think Manchester United got a little bit easier draw because we played Atletico twice in the group stage and they didn't look like really good. They looked pretty bad.
That's what we're hoping.
And so I think Manchester United would have been a little bit harder of a task against PSG than Atletico. Especially, I think Suarez just got injured this past weekend too, in that game. So I don't know if he's going to be on. So I don't know. I actually kind of like Manchester United now to possibly get through if Ragnick can get stuff right. No goals, right? No goals in his first three games. So no goals against, I should say. So
well, yeah. It's a really good segue. You know, is what we're seeing in United. First of all, are we seeing anything tangibly different, or is this the new manager bounce, Labrell?
I mean, well, let's have it right. Is there a new manager bounce? Have we seen a new manager bounce? Because, I mean, not from Ragnick, really. We saw one game and then we seen one performance that really didn't look that great. I mean, to be honest with you, it looks like more of the same thing to me. Like, you know, obviously we look a little different by playing, you know, some younger guys. But, like, I still really don't see a lot of intensity. We had intensity the first game, you know, in the first match against Palace. We had some intensity and we dropped off after about 40 minutes in the second half. We clearly dropped off. I don't know if it was legs or I don't know if it was just we thought we had the game in hand. I'm not exactly sure of, you know, what caused the drop off, but we definitely had it. Against Norwich, I just felt like we just didn't have any type of cohesion. I felt like, you know, When you have a real technical game, one game, and you know, and guys are linking up and you have good link up play and guys are overlapping, and then in the next game you have players running into blind channels and running into players and dribbling into players, and you're just Bruno's turning the ball over, just get so cheaply. I mean, it's almost like you just can't catch a rhythm. So I think that's maybe what it was in that game. They just, you know, couldn't catch their rhythm. But definitely you could see there was a clear difference in play. We definitely wasn't pressing as high up the pitch. The back line wasn't playing as high as well. And this is the thing that really got me. That was Ole's problem. It looks like Rangnick's problem too. We can just not break down a low block at all. Like we just, it's almost like there's no creativity. And that penalty was soft, but I'm glad we got it. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like if we didn't have that, it probably would have been 0-0. And they had clear chances. I think they might have had more clear chances than we had, really. So, I mean,
I got to tell you, Breezy, I didn't think I'd be the one to defend your team against you. But to be totally honest, first of all, they didn't really on play on the day deserve the win against Arsenal. They go on and follow that up, I think, again, doing what is necessary to win in kind of a weird circumstance against a Crystal Palace team that most weeks – than not get more and more respect around the league. And, you know, a win against Norwich when you do it is what you were supposed to do the whole time. But if you don't, you're the worst ever. So I don't know. It might be a little bit harsh. Do you think that that's enough to keep United seriously in the frame for Europe?
So, first of all, we've already closed the gap on four. That's already closed down. So all we have to do is just have a decent result for these run of fixtures that we have coming up, these mid-table and lower mid-table games that we have coming up. If we could just stay composed, stay organized. I think the thing is we have to put a good 11 on the pitch and then let them play so they can get some chemistry and cohesion. Because right now I think he's doing what TT did, and you know, when a new manager comes in, he's trying to figure out who's going to play for him and who's not. And clearly Lingard's not going to play for him. Clearly there's a few guys that just aren't going to play. They're just ready to go. So once he sorts all that out, we know who our first 11 is. I think that there won't be any gap to close. I think we'll probably come in third. But there's going to be a lot of outgoings. Third. Yeah.
Who you catching?
Somebody will be caught. You know it too. Somebody's going to slip up. It's probably going to be Liverpool, really. I think Liverpool's going to slip up.
You guys also have, I mean, I'm not going to comment on that, but
you should be. What are you talking about? You're not going to comment on it. That's the whole reason why I'm here. What are you talking about?
You just take shots, man. Liverpool has allowed a goal in the last six games. You're not basing that on any evidence other than you're in this little ticker right here. You're just hoping, oh, please let it be. Dear Santa, let Liverpool fall off.
Well, let's see.
Do they have what it takes over the long haul? I mean, I think that's kind of the question.
I mean, really, if I was like – my concern about the fourth position is Tottenham have two games in hand. So if you give them a total of 6 points for their two games in hand, they're actually in fourth, and they're points 2 points out in front. And that's
but
not just
Tottenham. They're Tottenham.
Antonio Conte is Tottenham Hotspur. That's not just everybody's Tottenham Hotspur. We should pay a little bit more of attention to what's going on down there because they have a competent fucking coach. I like the move that Manchester United made moving into the 21st century of football, right? They're moving into, you know, high lines and you know, counter-pressing and defending from the front. That's why you see a lot less actions happening at your goal mouth, is because you're defending in front of the goal you're attacking instead of defending in front of the goal you're defending. And so I think that makes a big difference, because you guys can make all the mistakes you need down there and they'll just get the ball to midfield. But, I mean, still, you still, like you said, you guys drop back against Norwich. You see, Maguire's going to come back, right? Like, because if they start pinging balls over top of his left shoulder and he's running to that corner flag, he's not going to feel real comfortable doing that. So he's going to move back naturally until he, hopefully, I mean, for Manchester United fans, gets acclimated, because Ragnar's got to push that back line up if you guys are going to press from the front. There's things for Manchester United to work out. They have issues with the squad. I mean, we sort of touched on this last time I was on. They have issues with the squad if they want to run that high press, counter press sort of a setup. They got holes to fill. And I think, obviously, they'll go into the market. I think the market, surprisingly enough, the winter market sounds like it's going to be fire. Like, I know Tottenham's going to want to spend money because Conte's going to demand shit, right? Because that's what Conte does. And I know Arsenal, they've been talking about spending all kinds of money because they're trying to find a nine. They desperately want to find a nine to go into fourth. And I think Manchester United have promised Ragnick some stuff. And you know how Ragnick does in the market, man. That's kind of where he's made his name, more than coaching, really, has been in the front office setup or position. So I think it's going to be – I think the winter market's going to be a little bit of fuel. I think it'll be nice.
Well, I mean, besides gunning for the championship, I think at least from a Liverpool standpoint, the most important thing in the near term is that you guys do your part to ensure the relegation and eternal suffering
of Newcastle. United, yeah, on Thursday. We're going to do it for you, and we're going to do it for you. They're critical. They're terrible. If we don't get 3 points there, LeBrell might be right.
it is almost a foregone with something like that. And really, you know, a team like Liverpool doesn't really need to get into second gear against the kind of what we've seen out of Newcastle this year.
Hey, I've got my own personal vendetta for the drop. Burnley is close. They are so close. If we can get Newcastle and Burnley to go down at the same time, we might have to meet somewhere. I'll catch a plane and we'll meet like Morgantown, West Virginia.
That's not hard math, to be fair. everybody's got to do their little bit over the course of the season. This is a very intriguing. There's almost a double championship in the Premier League this year. Yeah. In terms of who out of that top three, and then who out of, you could say three of them, right? Maybe even four. Who gets into Europe, who stays up, and then who comes up. So it's really fascinating. Looking at City's run-in, at least during this busy period, this is going to be a time that they're going to be able to bank points. You can say that to a lesser extent with Liverpool. Chelsea, taking us into another topic, are in a, I don't want to say they're in a blip, but they're not demonstrating a lot of what we saw as consistently as we saw it in the first 10 games. A couple of our Chelsea guys had some other things going on. I would have loved to hear from them, but you know, LeBron, what's your take on this with respect to Chelsea? Is this something they really need to be concerned about? Is it anything at all? Are those of us that basically hope for their demise as well, trying to manifest something into existence? What are you making of this? Is there anything there?
Well, so like Josh says, I think two things can be true. I think that they can be going just through a little blip. And also, I think that they're having injury issues, correct? So they have a couple people that are injured, I think, and they have and they did win the Champions League. So that's a high. I mean, there's going to be a letdown somewhere, right? You can't just keep going up, right? You have to kind of let down sometimes. So I definitely think that they're probably just going through a little blip. I know that I read in 442 that they said that TT has been known to kind of get a little emotional out on the training ground and kind of, you know, get a little stompy and kind of not, I don't want to say bully, because I, you know, I don't really know enough about him, but he demands that players play to the top level and to the level that he knows that they can. And players say that sometimes when it's intense, that kind of breeds a little drop off, like it's kind of like a caffeine high. And then there's like a, you know, almost like a cliff that you drop off. So I think that they'll be back strong. I think he'll rotate the squad. I think players will come back off of injury, and it would probably be the same old Chelsea that we've seen under his management. I mean, it would be a complete travesty if they just fell off, right? I mean, I hope that they do.
I was going to say travesty. I don't know if that's the word I would.
I like, mean, I'm just saying that, like, I'm talking about for their club. I'm not saying club. I'm saying for their club, I think it would be a complete travesty if they just fell off. But, I mean, we've seen it before. Things happen. This is football. I mean, this is the diary of a football team, the soap opera of the EPL. So anything can happen for sure.
They've obviously pushed a little couple guys more forward, further forward, right? They're scoring some more goals. They're letting a couple more goals in. I think we've seen them try to solve the hey, how come all of our wingbacks are scoring all of our goals? We should get some offensive players in those positions. And I think we've seen a little bit of that lead to, I mean, just better opportunities. And they were always outperforming their, here we go again, the M, where you at, buddy? They were always outperforming their XG as far as their XG against. The actual goals allowed was much lower than what the XG against was predicting. So that means that either Mendy's overperforming or they are the accumulation of quality of chances isn't very high. And the last couple of weeks, from what I've seen, the quality of chances have improved that other teams are having against them. And so they're actually finishing a couple of them, right? And Mendy had that little bit of a howler of a game against West Ham. You know, probably a little shocker there. But obviously, you know, against Zenit, I think Kepa was in goal there. And while Kepa can be fantastic, because apparently he kept that game to 3-3. It should have been 5 or 6-3, apparently. But Kepa also lets in goals. He's statistically the worst goalkeeper by a wide margin when you look at all of the metrics over the past couple of years for EPL goalkeepers. He is, you know how you have top right Messi in those little plot graphs? You see online they have top right Messi because he's always in that top corner for being good at both the vertical and the horizontal thing. Well, Kepa's always bottom left corner because he's bad at both the vertical and the horizontal thing. But no, I mean, obviously that's why they went out and got Mendy. And Mendy is, you know, if not the best keeper in the world, he's in the top three right now. So, yeah.
He, I got to tell you, he's one of those Chelsea players that I covet, even though I would not trade Arsenal's number one right now for anything. Aaron Ramsdale is really special. Mendy is just physically and just disposition wise, he is such.
So is Ramsdale better than Pickford?
Oh, I think on several fronts, but the short answer would be yes. If I was going to give a little bit more context, I think he's a much more reliable character earlier in his career than Pickford has turned. He has a better tactical understanding of the game, and I think most relevant to the way Arsenal trying to play, he also, I think, has the feet to be an infield player. He's got the range of passing to do it, certainly. So it's probably a matter of, like, look, Arsenal right now, even though we are almost benefited by having more losses than ties, he still has 7 clean sheets. And if you just continue that through the season, especially given the kind of season Everton's having, not a bad position if you're Aaron Ramsdale. Is something, boys, that I wanted to talk about just maybe as a bit of an audible, and it flashed up just while we were discussing the Premier League. It is confirmed that Tuesday's match with
Manchester United.
With United and Norwich is postponed.
Brentford,
forgive me.
Yeah.
So the reason I wanted to bring this up, we're seeing some outbreaks not only in England, but kind of throughout Europe. And when you're an athlete or when you are a celebrity or basically someone who kind of can afford to be handled, often the COVID protocols that we've seen in the last year and a half can be arbitrary for you, or you basically have people to quote unquote handle that. The next 18 months in world football is an exceptionally packed schedule. And I just kind of wanted to talk to you guys, get your thoughts on this, because I for one, am a little bit worried that we're going to see more and more postponed matches. They may not be made up. And I think that could have really strange implications for teams on really all parts of the cross section of this table. So, you know, part of it is the different countries have different protocols, the different leagues have protocols. In some cases, the leagues are leaving it to the player, to the teams. And it's sometimes reasonable for players to be confused about this. I don't know. Might I be making a mountain out of a molehill? Is this something that has caught your guys' eye?
I think that, for one, I surely don't have my head wrapped around the statistical data for Europe's COVID cases and the transmissible nature of the new Omicron, which I believe is 2 times as transmissible as Delta was. although it's less severe. Apparently it's less severe. But I don't know the data. I do know that Tottenham hasn't practiced for a week, week and a half. I do know that Manchester United has Aston Villa, who we just played, Liverpool just played, had a rash of COVID cases in not really their playing staff, but more their coaching staff. It's got to cause a problem, right? AFCON's happening. It doesn't seem like the preventative, the preventative things that are happening throughout Europe are necessarily being implicated in the same way in Africa and other parts of like Europe, like Eastern Europe, Eastern Bloc Europe. I don't know what the protocols are in places, but I do know that there is worry about all these things happening in these areas. And, Tottenham were supposed to play Mora. I don't even know what country Mora is based out of. Where didn't they just have a game canceled in their conference league?
Maybe Romanian, maybe. But it's exactly as you're saying, LeBron. The World Cup's going to happen in the winter. Next season's Premier League season and all the European leagues are gonna be interrupted. Kind of think of like a reverse of the holiday fixture, where what was once the most congested part of the season is not going to be played at all because your internationals are going to be in Qatar. Isn't it Qatar? It's Qatar for the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Am I overreacting on this? I'm wondering if there's a way that we can get in front of this at all.
So, first off and foremost, when it comes down to COVID-19 or any type of outbreak sickness, anything like that, general health, anything like that, player having asthma, anything like that, health comes first, always for me. It doesn't matter. Health first. Like, it doesn't matter. This is a game that they play for recreation. Yeah, monetarily they get paid, but, this is our entertainment. So, hopefully, whatever protocols England has in place and their National Health Service or whatever that they do over there, I hope that they have their ducks in a row, because I know as a country, we did not. And I know that we have caught up, and I do know this for a fact. I have friends of mine that live locally that work in D.C., and they work for for the Washington football team, and they have a protocol in place that if those players get COVID, what they do, how they make sure that, wearing those bracelets and everything, that they can track them and see their temperatures and all that stuff. So I don't know if they have that there. But I know you guys all remember the NBA bubble and everything that they went through and all that stuff here. So I can't imagine that they don't have a system set up. And if they don't have a system set up, then shame on them, and whatever happens, happens. As far as the games go, not human health, but as far as the games go, cancel them, don't cancel them. Liverpool wins. No, we don't want that. But I'm saying, whatever happens with the schedule and the points, guys, it's not important. The important thing to me is that these people are healthy and well and not transmitting this disease, because it's not bad for young people who don't have any underlying illnesses. But people who are sick and people who do have illnesses, autoimmune diseases, all these things, this is deadly. And you don't know who you're going to be around, and you never know who you're going to come in contact with. My point is I don't know where they have a system. I don't think that you're making a mountain out of a molehill. I think there's tons of questions that we could ask. We could have, a hour-long podcast on that.
Yeah, more. Yeah.
So my whole point is this. People first, health first, football and entertainment second. Wherever they marry and meet, I'll be happy with.
Yeah.
Because, but I'm sure that they have some system in place. And as long as they jip Liverpool points, just cancel their games, give them draws. Manchester City get draws. United get wins. Let's go.
Yeah, it looks like you guys are going to be the first in line to get the draw with the Brentford matchup being canceled tomorrow. So we'll see how that plays out further down the line.
That's what they're saying. They're saying it might be a draw.
If they give you guys a draw, that's probably a point gain for you guys, to be honest.
That was so sneaky. So sneaky. I'm going on mute. That was sneaky.
I also need to go back to a point for the previous that the The difference between Ramsdale and Pickford is that Ramsdale has appropriate length arms for a goalkeeper, whereas Jordan Pickford just has those little tiny arms.
Hold on, Josh. Listen, he is trying to take on KG today. He's trying to pull KG's persona. Do you see these shots he's firing? Little arms and whatnot. I see what you're doing, man.
As a Liverpool fan, if I can't make fun of Jordan Pickford's arms, me and Thibaut Courtois, if we can't make fun of Jordan Pickford's arms, then what are we even about?
It would have been great to actually have Rohit after the Everton win against Arsenal to kind of hear that, because both going into the match, he was not feeling great, and that was a really good one. But yeah, no.
What a hit. Hold on. What a hit, Damari Gray. Are you kidding me? Just a fucking rocket. Oh,
there's not a lot you can do about that. And the thing about Ramsdale is in these games, he's averaging about 5 to 6 saves per. And these are really nice saves that we're seeing him make. Another thing,
he makes them look good for the camera. Ramsdale be out there freaking taking one. He gets sideways a lot.
He sure does. And frankly, I think that there might be some truth in what you're saying. But also, we, especially in the last couple of games, the defensive midfield was doing a little more dropping off as they were entering the attacking third, and he was getting things at unsighted angles. You know, going into transfer season. A lot of teams, you mentioned it earlier, Josh, it's going to be nuts. I'd love to just kind of get your guys' thoughts on if you had to move one and bring one in, who would they be? And if you didn't have a who, positionally, because I know it's kind of an off the cuff question, and just to give you a moment to think about it, I'll start off with Arsenal. And you did say earlier, we're in need of a number 9 desperately. You've got 2 strikers over the age of 30, both the number 1 and number 3 wage earners at the club. Just this last week, the club captain was involved in a disciplinary matter that, on the face of it, if it was the only time, would be a huge deal. But this is those situations that one of those situations that it's not really about the severity of the incident, but rather the repeat nature of the violations. And even in this modern time where maybe different things are being asked of leaders in sports, there are things that you think are bare minimum of out of a captain, behaviorally speaking. And the problem is that on a one-off, they aren't a big deal. But when they don't become a one-off, then they have to be. And that becomes a major distraction when a manager is trying to allocate his resources, especially in a context where the offender is somebody that you're about to lose to AFCON anyway. So again, we need a number 9. Who I would ship out, I think at the moment probably it would be a couple of loan deals for some of the younger guys. I'd love to see Flo Balogun get a loan deal, maybe even championship, kind of rough him up a little bit, make sure he gets some minutes. It's done great things for players like Eddie Nketiah and Emil Smith Rowe, more so the latter. And I would love to bring in a striker. Now, there's a lot of are kind of gracing the headlines. You see a lot of talk about Vlahovic. You see a lot of talk about Dominic Calvert-Lewin. You know, this is going to be crazy. I think that Arsenal should find out if it's at all possible to attract Erling Haaland from Borussia Dortmund to the club. I think that there's a playing style that he would benefit. I mean, he could literally be the tip of the spear to recapturing a glory that has been well and truly lost by the club. And it's my fantasy, and I'm going to do what I want to. So with that said, Josh, I'm going to channel those haughty exhales and the uncomfortable movements in your seat for some sort of hot take on that nonsense.
Oh, my God. Erling Haaland's not going to come and play in the Conference League or wherever the hell you guys. You guys are you playing in – he's not going to go to Bora next. You guys might be 7.
That was my whole point, Josh. I was like, what?
He's not doing that. honestly, if I was Arsenal, I mean, I know I've been saying this, you know, since the summertime, but somebody has got to go get Arthur Cabral from Basel. He won't stop scoring. He's funny. He's got to have some kind of disciplinary problems that I don't know about. Because every time I watch him, he does something fun and puts it in the back of the net. He literally headed a ball like 4 inches off the ground this weekend. Far post, too. He was near post and headed it just like that's where he ended up. So he just threw his head at it. Far post goal. I mean, the guy, he just can't stop scoring. I think he scored something in the 20s range this year already. Somebody's got to get him. He's going to be for sale. Somebody's got to get him. There was some talk of Barcelona, but he's a nine. He's a big-bodied Brazilian nine. Arthur Cabral. From a Liverpool perspective, we need somebody. Like the guys that I want probably aren't going to be available in the winter, so we'll probably just wait. But I think the move that we should probably make is if we can sell Nat Phillips, we should sell Nat Phillips. Who, by the way, if you haven't seen Nat Phillips, Cruyff turn Ibrahimovic and Kessie in his own box and just leave everybody for dead, you need to go watch that 45-second clip. That was money, money, money. I think if we sell Nat Phillips to West Ham or somebody who needs a Premier League proven center back for 15 or 20 mil, that can go right to the kitty to picking up guys like maybe like Emmanuel Dennis or Ismaila Sarr from Watford if they go down, because those guys, both those guys I like to come in and play one of our three front positions, because we're kind of flexible with how we play. He is wow specimen. But Ismaila Sarr is
nowhere.
Never heard of him. Yeah.
You know what? Now again, Watford players aren't going to necessarily get big spotlights, but he's showing real consistency this year.
Dude, I follow this stuff, right? Like I kind of know the no name guys because I'm digging up players and watching videos on guys that you really haven't heard of, and that's one of the things I enjoy doing. And I had never heard of him, but he is explosive. Explosive reminds me a little bit of Mane, right? Like that explosiveness to be able to turn and square you up. He wants to stop you. Right, like Mane wants to stop you and then get you on the restart. Right, he wants to slow you down. So we'll see.
Snake hips type player, really.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. And Sarr's been a long term sort of target for us anyway. So, you know, just kind of have to wait till the summer windows here for those two for sure.
Is he dipping? And we're gonna get to you, LeBron. Nah. I know you got some things in mind, but it's a year ago right now. If you said that about Sarr, you could easily talk about serious, serious money offers. Do you think that his drop off this year is a product of kind of the schizophrenic leadership, less so his own form? I mean,
he's got six goals for Watford, right?
Yeah,
he's got six goals for Watford. That's not a bad return.
He's one of those players, I think, too. And now to be fair, because he's so brave and he tries such ambitious things that his non-successes get a lot of eyes on him. That's fair.
All strikers miss, right? Like Salah misses, yeah. Right? Like all strikers miss.
I prefer
you gotta be able to go.
it would be great if you guys didn't sell to West Ham, preferably just for reasons of we need everything that they want. They want everything that we used to have. Breezy, what do you got? Who you shifting? Who you bringing?
So this just needs to be said, Arsenal, that you're in negotiations with West Ham. You're fighting for players with West Ham. That's ridiculous.
Yo, West
how far
Ham,
have you fallen? Man, you remind me how far you've fallen every time I hear you talk, bro. Come on, man. Fighting for players with West Ham? Fighting for scraps, bro.
Only from lightness. Who you moving on from?
I mean, really, honestly, we need somebody in the midfield that can hold the ball in the midfield and can just dictate play. We haven't had that since Michael Carrick. I mean, some people would say, I don't know. I guess I would probably say Michael Carrick is the last time somebody dominated our midfield and really controlled play. So, I mean, you know, I guess my wish list would be like a Kimmich or a Goretzka, something like that, you know, obviously, but every team in the world wants that. But I don't think we need that. This is going to be probably the hottest take of the whole night. I think our midfield is so bad. If we had an Ndidi, a Basuma, a Suchek, any of those guys, I think all those guys are better than our current midfield. All those guys are way better than what we have right now. Whenever Matic plays well, he shows you that, you know, an old guy with no legs can get out there and dominate a team in the midfield. Like, he only does it for 30 minutes. But that's a great 30 minutes to watch. He puts out some nice passes. He dictates play. But yeah, I mean, if I had to honestly pick one that I think we could probably get, I would probably say I would like to have Declan Rice, but I would like to have somebody that's a little bit faster than him as well. He's made a couple of poor decisions. I mean, I know West Ham is playing well as a team, but I think he might be, he himself might not be holding up to the pressure. I want someone that's a scrapper. I want the Makaleli role. You know what I'm saying? I want somebody to just be an in and out, just scrapper, who's just going to fight for everything in the midfield and then dictate play. And I know that sounds like a lot, but is it though for the top clubs in the world? Shouldn't that be part of the, you know, it shouldn't be just pace, right? You shouldn't just be a pace merchant out there. Oh, he can put in a good tackle and he's fast. Is that really what Manchester United's accepting? I hope not. So yeah. An Ndidi, a Basuma, but really I'd like to have a Declan Rice. That would be nice.
Yeah, I think the when evaluating players from mid-table and below teams, one of the things you have to take into consideration is the ability for these players to take risks, right? Because they know that they are the either defensive force or the offensive force of their teams and difference makers. So a Declan Rice can, as we just saw on the weekend, I watched a little bit of that game, he can dribble 3-4 guys and take that risk by abandoning his position. Fabinho really can't do that. And Fabinho doesn't have to do that because he knows that's not his role, right? His role is to shield, and let the other guys take the risks. Let Mohamed Salah, the best offensive player on the planet, take those risks and not Fabinho, who's going to have a success rate. We'll leave those risks to be taken by Joel Matip, who will walk it down into the opponent's box. So I think that, and so we've seen some mistakes from Declan Rice defensively as well. We saw some with England too here, in the past couple international breaks. He's a really, really tasty player, but he's not the answer to all the problems. And I think you're right, Labrell, that with the 4-2-2-2 that you guys are going to play, you don't necessarily need like a Fabinho 6. Like a Shuttler 8-6, like a Basuma type will be just fine. Like you don't need an Ndidi. You like a Basuma will be just fine in that midfield to pair with either Fred or McTominay or even a Matic, once every 2 weeks when his legs are there.
Right.
So I think probably Basuma is probably gettable. I don't know about in the wintertime because they might be facing the break. I mean, or the drop, maybe probably not. There's a lot of teams down there. Well, Burnley, also, come on, Burnley.
He starts such a consistent team. He'll be loath to lose a player like that. Given where they're going to be, you can imagine, into the final run into the season. I mean, it's going to be packed, guys. Look, there's 5 games between tomorrow and January 3rd. Assuming we don't see any more postponements,
cancellations, so on, yeah.
Which it's entirely reasonable to expect that we will see some, and certainly there'll be plenty of entertainment. And I think Labrell makes the most important point that the priority is that people stay safe, that if they're infected, that they isolate, that they take all the appropriate measures needed. We ideally would be in a situation where there was a lot more coherence across the board, all of the sanctioning bodies, all of the different organizations, and there could be a way that we could do this with a mutually accepted risk that is just not the reality today. So, we're going to see some lurching back and forth, but to the point, there's a lot of football to come. And for that, we're very fortunate, especially as fans of the EPL primarily. Just kind of looking ahead, what, if anything, is kind of key for your teams, and I'll give you guys the last word on this. What is kind of key for your teams as you go into the festive season? And in all three of our cases, we've all got a clear goal in mind. What is that main thing that you think your teams need to focus on going into this?
Go ahead, LeBron.
Well, I guess we're the only team here that has a new manager. So just on my Christmas wish list will be some cohesion, to find out who our actual best 11 is, to put those actually on the pitch at the same time, and to just get a nice string of results. That would be nice. nobody wants to see their team ever play bad, but you know, whenever you're making changes that, you know, you, just like you said just a few minutes ago, you know, it's got to be dark in order to appreciate the light, right? So, you know, we'll have our day back, just like Arsenal will eventually have their day back, just not hopefully not too soon. You know, Liverpool's had their day more recent than both of us, so, you know what I'm saying? But all in all, if we could just have some cohesion, just, you know, play as a unit, just, you know, press as a unit, defend as a unit, attack as a unit, just look good, right? Why can't it just come down to something simple? Just look good. I just want to feel good, and, you know, I just want it to look good. You know, why can't it just be as simple as that? So just have a good feeling throughout these five games, you know, just my whole family, nobody in my whole entire family knew what Boxing Day was. I was in Pittsburgh at a family Christmas function, and they had a TV downstairs. I went downstairs and I started watching the Boxing Day fixtures early in the morning. Now, they all cheer for different EPL teams, and nice. I don't know how they picked them or what they picked nice. Or whatever, but the place that I was, my uncle is a Pirates and a Steelers fan. This bastard picked Manchester City, and he is decked in it. I mean, it's flags everywhere, the towel on the back of his chair, and he switches it for Pirates, Steelers, and Manchester City. He switches it. But the thing is this. Cohesion. Fellowship, and I'm so glad to be on the pod tonight too. Not the gush, but I haven't been on in a while. It's, you know, it's been a hot minute. I haven't seen you guys. I missed that shiny head, Aiden. So I missed the mason jar, man. I missed the mason jar.
LeBro, you guys go. Here's the mason jar, brother. You guys go. Brighton, Newcastle, Burnley, Wolves into the new year. And right. that could be 12 out of 12, right?
I'm hoping. That's what we're hoping for.
Because Burnley and Newcastle are miserable. Wolves, man, that was one shithouse team that I saw against us. It was, I mean, that was like Atletico Madrid turned up to 11. That was bad. And Brighton is obviously a ball-playing team who could possibly get you, but they don't really score a bunch of goals. Yeah, and then you got Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa back to back. I don't know why that's got OFA.
Newcastle's next three games are Liverpool, City, and United.
Oh, let's put 20 up on them. Let's put 20 total.
Let's just put 20 in them. Let us be shooting at a lifeless carcass, please. Josh, what are your look for as you go into this kind of this festive period? I mean, you guys have such a well-balanced squad, but it's always that it's interesting because you could see Jurgen preparing. You could see him adding in the players that will have to supplement those gaps.
For AFCON,
trying to be proactive about the gaps. So, yeah, what's your thing?
So I think the most, and this is going to sound pretty obvious, right? This is going to be the Michael Owen of statements, is that we got to keep winning. We can't lose. Up against Manchester City and Chelsea. I mean, this seems like we're going to go again like we did in 18, 19, 19, 20 with the 100 and then 99 points or the winning totals. I don't know if it's going to be that high, but man, nobody really wants to drop points, right? Nobody wants to be the first to flinch and sort of say, here's that opening. You guys put a couple between us.
I think Chelsea already flinched, right?
Yeah, they definitely flinched and came back to the pack a little bit, but I mean, I'm sort of looking at City there and just sort of hoping that that somebody can, because City is prone to a clanger every now and then, but we just, whether it's 1-0 or 4-0, I was really kind of glad to see those back-to-back 1-0 results to show that we can actually do it. And we're not going to fold like we were at the beginning of the season. I think the beginning of the season, we changed formation a little bit and changed how that right-sided eight, his position on the field. And so I think it took a second to get accustomed to defending and shielding with that being there. But now that we have, man, we've turned in some really good defensive performances. I think Allison leads the Premier League in clean sheets. So I think we're all right and looking better in that area, and we're always going to have chances, right? Like sometimes we'll score them and sometimes we won't, but we seem to always generate chances. We're a fun team to watch. And so I hope that we don't lose. coming into the year. I hope we win all of our games.
Yeah, it's interesting because both of your teams have managers that are really good at blending the midterm with short-term needs. From an Arsenal perspective, there's still a little bit to be found out about what our manager is doing. If I was going to sum up maybe two key things that I'd love to see come out of these next five games, these next 15 points on offer, really, I'd love to see two steps forward followed by a third step forward. We have that tendency to do a different variant of half a step forward, two back, two forward, three back. I want to see us do two steps forward and follow that with a third step, internalize that feeling, then follow it with a fourth step and go from there. And in so doing, I'd also love to see, and this weekend is a, or this, yeah, this weekend will be a key opportunity to get that started. We have to move into positive goal differential. That is what European places will come down to for at least one, or if not two, of those European spots, Europa and Champions League. Speaking from our standpoint, West Ham is the monkey that we're chasing, and there's a world where we end up even on points and goal differential is going to do the trick, and as well head to heads. So the game coming up is going to be even that much bigger. But with that said, guys, I'm going to leave it there. As always, for all things soccer family, check us out on soccerfam.com. And we'd love to have your support as a Patreon member. For as little as $3 a month, you can get exclusive content and be a part of our family. You can join on patreon.com/thesoccerfamily. On behalf of the family that isn't here, Josh and LaBrell, I'm Aiden, and we will see you next time for another
family. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Later, guys.
Yep. Dinner time.